After more than 20 years outside every Blues home game, St. Louis Game Time is bringing the coverage to you. It's almost always never easy, but this is Game Time AM with Brad Lee and Jeff Jones on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. Hey, it's like what, Wednesday?
It is like Wednesday.
The days all kind of run together when you're getting up so dark and early. But I know the sun is starting to peek out. I can already see the faint outline of the building across the parking lot.
I'm telling you, earlier and earlier.
Yeah, that's what happens in the summer, I guess. I'm Brad. That's Jeff over there chiming in already. Matt Davis pushing the buttons, making sure we're on the air and playing the music. Good morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, we got Blues news to talk about.
We got lots of Blues news to talk about. It was a busy day yesterday.
Yeah, for being a week and a half past the Blues last playing a game, there's actually things to talk about. But the thing I think we're going to lead off with is the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I tell you what, I got the outcome I was rooting for last night, a regulation finish.
Yeah.
I was not rooting for overtime at all.
Look, then you're better than me because you stayed up to watch the end of the game. So,
So do I need to tell you what the score was?
No, it was 2-1 Nashville.
Yeah,
which means that as of this morning, currently as we speak, the Nashville Predators are as close to the Stanley Cup Finals as the Blues have been in my entire life.
Wow, I don't know how to follow that up.
I mean, it's true. That is, last year, the two wins against San Jose was the best finish a Blues team has ever had since 1987.
Yeah, actually, after the game was over and the place was just going nuts. First, I joked, I think they think they're in the Stanley Cup final already, which is
not
true.
Well, they definitely do. Yeah. Their papers think that, at least.
The TV news.
Right.
And I was a little torn. Because I thought, wow, they just have to win two more home games, and they're playing for the thing.
I'm telling you, until they lose a home game, they have to be the favorite.
And that's the other thing that ran through my head was, as long as they hold serve at home, like you said, and not lose a home game like they have this entire playoffs.
They're 6-0 at home in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're in the driver's seat. So amazing turn of events.
I will say, I was kind of disappointed that they didn't have their angry anthem guy. Throw the catfish, right? Because I know, like, I don't know what the deal is with that in the Ducks. I guess there's something going on there. I don't know.
Was it Keith Urban?
Keith Urban was the guy that sang last night, yeah.
Right? And then, they apparently showed him with a catfish in the third period.
Okay, so maybe I'm wrong about. I thought the catfish was an Anaheim thing. I thought it was like a Ducks fan thing to throw the catfish.
No. See,
my understanding of it because the one got thrown in Anaheim. So my understanding of it was that it was
a Predators fan.
Oh, well, then never mind.
Catfish is kind of a southern thing.
Well, that's what you mean. Yeah, so I didn't really get it, but a duck is an aquatic creature, so I thought that there was something going on there.
I don't think ducks and catfish ever really commingle.
They probably do. I don't know.
Catfish or bottom dwellers? What are you talking about?
I'm going to the zoo in 4 hours.
What are you going to the zoo for today?
Well, because I got, you know, I live near-ish to the zoo, and so when my sister takes the kids to do things in the summertime, she says, come with me, and I say, yeah, why not?
Oh, that's fine.
You know, my uncle... Once upon a time, and this would have been in the mid-90s, had an aquarium in his house, and he had a river catfish that somebody had caught or something and given to him. I don't know how he got the catfish. My uncle had this catfish, and it was rapidly growing too big for his aquarium and then eating all the other fish. So he actually donated it to the St. Louis Zoo, and it lived at the zoo for like 5 years, and it ended up being like an 80-pound catfish. Like, it was a monstrous catfish that he had somehow just had in his house.
I'm sure a lot of people have catfish stories with their uncles, but a little bit different kind of
catfish.
That's
true, but here's the thing. Like, this uncle is the least catfish-friendly uncle that you can possibly imagine, right? Like, this uncle is, you know, like, works in the nightclub industry, right? If you said to me, find one person in your life that has Timberfake's number in their phone, I would not go to Tim. I would go to my Uncle Mike.
Wow, that's crazy. All right, so the Predators held serve at home last night, 2-1 win, rather late. And I tell you what, the difference between that game last night and the Senators and Penguins the night before, night and day difference. And it wasn't just like the atmosphere of the game. I mean, there were two goals waved off on the Predators last night. I think both in the third period. There was another one where they were trying to judge whether or not the puck crossed the line before the
net came off,
before the net was dislodged. That would have been for the Ducks. So three judgment calls there in the third period that could have swung that game either way. And we have a guest at 6:30.
Yes, Mary Clark from SB Nation. The SBN basically has two national writers that cover the whole country. So we've had Pat Iverson on a couple times, and Mary is the other one.
My number one question is, if we say anything negative about the Predators or their game day experience or the crowd or anything, is that just sour grapes on our part?
No, I don't think so. I think it's fair to, I mean, look, there,
she may give a different answer.
Maybe, but also, I just don't think that there is a virulence towards Nashville. There's still not. So, I know I've seen people on Twitter, like, and I'm sure there are people who think I'm not a real fan because I don't hate the Predators right now or something, but I just don't, and I don't. It's just not there for me.
As long as the Blues Lounge doesn't call you out by name, you're fine. Probably.
I mean, look, as long as somebody says my name, that's probably fine.
Yeah, that's true. But I, you know, the two goals that were disallowed, both for goaltender interference. One, the Predators player landed on Gibson and basically laid on him and did not let him up, and then all of a sudden the puck goes flying in the net,
which is identical, by the way, to the goal that tied that game, that huge comeback in Edmonton, where Ryan Kessler falls on Cam Talbot, or is pushed onto Cam Talbot, but then doesn't get off his leg. It just sort of sits on his leg when Raquel puts it in the empty net.
There was a little bit of a collision, but it was mainly the Predators player laying on Gibson, the goaltender. The second one, the Predators player just comes flying through after he's played the puck, and he collides with the goaltender. It was bad enough that they gave him a two-minute goaltender interference call. People booed. After both calls, the ref, you suck chant starts. And then the second one, people started throwing their rally towels on the ice. It was bad enough they called a two-minute penalty, and they're throwing crap on the ice.
Stop it, Hoosiers.
I got to question whether or not the fans understand what's going on. That's just me.
Yeah.
So, you know, but
I mean, it's, look, I do think there is going to be a degree of they've never been here before and they don't really know how to handle it. But you know what? There would be a degree of that here too, right? In the event that the Blues were to get through the conference finals, like in the event that
next year?
Yeah, sure. In the event that a Stanley Cup final game is ever played at Scott Trade Center before it's demolished in 30 years.
I thought it was 20.
Well, 20, yeah. That would be a fun bet. Not a fun bet, like it'd be a horribly depressing bet, but will there be a Stanley Cup final game played at Scott Trade Center?
Ever. I was in a good mood, Jeff. Why'd you ruin it?
I'm just asking.
No, you're ruining my mood.
I'm just asking questions.
Yeah, but you know what my answer probably is going to be. Come on.
Look.
Hey, if Hockey Bob calls, I'm going to push the microphone away again.
Well, no, look, I was just about to say we've learned through the wisdom of people that, you know, it's not about winning or losing. It's about having fun.
So. Well, that's true. We could always watch Big Bang Theory instead of the playoff game tonight. All right, so...
You know, I watched yesterday, I watched a PBS dramatized documentary on James Garfield yesterday, and it was delightful.
Yeah, but you've seen, like, Hamilton and knew all that.
I have. I saw Hamilton on Broadway. Hashtag blessed.
Yeah, I don't know the first thing about it. All right, so last night...
James Garfield lived, like, 130 years after Alexander. Well, I mean, he lived 80 years after, but, like, was active.
You're still talking about dramatized, historic... type thing.
Yeah, but it was good.
But there was no rapping.
James Garfield does not get his due, I think. That's a hero of the Civil War.
Was there rapping in it?
There was not rapping. Okay. No. Catherine Irby was in it though.
Who?
She was the lady cop on Law and Order Criminal Intent. That probably she was Vincent D'Onofrio's partner. Yeah. She was Lucretia Garfield.
Ah, gotcha.
That's a name that you don't really hear anymore.
No, and if I tried saying it, you'd probably say I pronounced it wrong.
Possibly.
All right, so last night the Predators put 40 shots on net compared to 20 for the Ducks. I mean, they doubled them up. The flurry of activity in that game last night, I mean, it was a thrilling game. Face-off percentage, hey, shocking, the Predators won 56%. Power plays, the Predators got 4. I'm sure the Predators fans think they should have gotten 8.
By the way, let me ask you.
Yeah?
Do you have to call this game a flurry of activity because you can't use that for the Penguins game?
because there's Marc-Andre Fleury.
Right, you'd feel bad calling it a flurry of activity. So you
no,
have
it's
to,
more
you have to
if
get,
you
have to
it
get it all out
game.
For the Anaheim game.
I watching last night, especially that third period, I was like, wow, this is an intense game.
It for sure was more active.
All right, fair enough.
I enjoy a good wordplay or even a bad one.
Ducks 1-for-2 on the power play. I'm sure the Predators fans felt like there was too many power plays for the Ducks. Hits 32-24 Predators. Block shots 22 for the Ducks, 7 for the Predators. So
I mean, I saw at one point that the Predators were outshot attempting the Ducks like 52-25 by halfway through the game.
So that means they had at least 62 shot attempts, and that doesn't even account shots that went wide. So they're probably in the 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
By that point, so I mean that shows how much they were throwing at the net. Corey Perry with his third of the playoffs from Raquel and Vatanen. And then in the third period, Philip Forsberg tied it up. His sixth of the playoffs. Ryan Ellis with his six assists. And then Roman Josi, his fifth of the playoffs. Go figure, a defenseman scores the game-winning goal for the Predators.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah. He basically, on the power play, he kind of walks in, and I think he's just inside the face-off circle. And it's kind of one of those backdoor plays where the pressure's all on one side. He kind of sneaks in the back door and puts it into the mostly empty net.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. It still feels like, and maybe this is just my bias, it still feels like the Predators are not that good of a team, but they're finding a way to win, and, you know, they capitalize on the power play. The game-winning goal was a power play goal. You know, they're playing a physical game, and they're activating their defensemen. You know, the Joe Fallein Forsberg scores the goal, and he's fired up. He's basically fist pumping his way into the celebration circle, and
yep.
You know, place goes crazy.
And in the meantime, Cody McLeod manages to make Jared Bull a relevant player, which is insane. And they don't get punished for it.
You know,
they just get away with Cody McLeod.
You know what was funny? So there's a big hit, and so basically Cody McLeod and Jared Bull dropped the gloves, and it was a long fight, and I mean Bull was like shedding clothing. He lost his helmet, and they didn't stop the fight. I was like, oh, helmet's off, they're gonna stop it. And yep. The linesman just kept watching.
To get the instigator penalty called against you in the playoffs,
yeah,
that, I mean, I would honestly be very curious to count the raw number of times an instigator has ever been called in the Stanley Cup playoffs, because I bet that it's fewer than 10.
So that was during the second period. So the intermission before the third period, Jeremy Roenick and Mike Milbury were basically saying, guys, cut it out. You don't have to fight after every big hit. It was a legal hit. You know, it was an entertaining fight, but
right.
The instigator penalty hurts your team. And you know what? They didn't really have to drop the gloves. But, I mean, how else is Jared Bull going to be, I mean, a factor in a game unless he's dropping the gloves?
Well, but that's the thing. If you're the Predators, why do you want to make Jared Bull a factor in the game? Aside from, I don't know, a bad turnover which results in a Nashville goal, like, just ignore him. And the same thing for the Ducks. Like,
guess the ice time of Jared Bull.
Oh, it's got to be less than 8 minutes. So we'll say 6:15.
4:01.
Okay.
In fact, Andrew Cogliano is the only other Ducks forward to play less than 10 minutes, the only other Ducks player to play less than 10 minutes. Everyone was in double digits other than Jared Bull and Cogliano.
Do you know the notable thing about Andrew Cogliano?
What's that?
You don't know it?
No, what?
He is the ongoing Ironman streak guy in the NHL.
I did not know
he's
that.
He's played like over 700 games consecutive without missing one.
Well, if he's only playing 941, he's pacing himself.
It is interesting because he has been on one of their most consistent and effective forward lines. I'd have to look. I would imagine I would have to look at the shift chart, because I'm guessing he probably got dinged last night or was otherwise kind of hurt, because he plays regularly on that line with Kessler and Silverberg, and I would think they would get more than 9 minutes at even strength.
Cody McLeod, guess the ice time, Cody McLeod.
I mean, he missed, he had 15 minutes in penalties, so I'm going to say 5:50.
5:02.
There you go.
Yeah, so really making an impact that 5 minutes, and other than Harry Zolnarczyk, did I say that right?
You did.
All right.
You got Cogliano wrong, but you nailed Zolnarczyk.
Hey, Hockey Bob, call in. Those are the only two guys that played less than 10 minutes for the Nashville Predators last night. So, man, do you think the Predators are in the driver's seat? Is this thing
I mean,
close
they're
to over.
They're I don't know. It's two games from over. I don't know. They, I mean, they have home ice in the series at this point because they took the game in Anaheim and they're up 2-1 in the series. So yeah, I think that they're probably in the driver's seat. I don't know if they know what to do when they get there. We'll see. I guess they don't lose home games. They just don't lose, yeah. And they are finding ways to win, ugly, dirty, whatever. So
the anthem singer, the guy,
Dennis K. Morgan. Yes.
Did not sing the anthem.
He needs a nickname, right? Like, it's got to be Special K.
Special K.
Yeah, because he's so into the K. Like, the K is a big deal, apparently.
So we talked about that story on the radio yesterday, and then it blew up. Puck Daddy did a story. I think Deadspin had a story.
Yeah.
And then several of our friends, like Angela Sharp, was chiming in, and I think it was on the TMA fan page.
You know, it was funny, because I saw Puck Daddy.
So we were out front on that story.
Put out a siren call, basically, and was like, if you're a Predators fan who really cares about this, please email us and explain. And he got, like, a full inbox of Predators fans being like, we want Special K back.
It's Music City, so of course they take their anthem seriously. So they had Keith Urban, and I got to tell you, if you're a butthurt Blues fan who says that the arena experience, the noise and the crowd participation with all the prompts and the chants and the signs saying on the scoreboard saying make noise and all that, if it's a little bit manufactured, then I think it was just fitting that Keith Urban, an Australian who tries to sound like he's from Nashville,
he does,
and
who's married
anthem.
To another Australian, by the way.
She's an alien. What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's fair.
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
How many surgeries has she had on her face?
I don't actually. I'm not usually great at spotting that stuff. Does she have like a surgery face?
Are you kidding?
She does.
I don't.
Are
think
you
she
kidding?
Does either. I think she just looks.
Are
that
you
way.
Kidding?
No.
I think
Google,
she looks
Google
like an older
Google,
version
no,
of
no,
herself.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I mean,
no.
I mean, I will.
There's that
no.
picture going around the internet of like five cans.
By the way, allegedly.
Allegedly.
I am guaranteeing 5-star lock, lead pipe lock, that she has had multiple plastic surgery.
Well, the first link when I there is a Life and Style link from January, and the headline is plastic surgery. And Nicole Kidman. Now this is a whole thing about the Golden Globes. Let's see here.
Come on, she looks like an alien. Now.
Well, maybe a little bit.
Come on, you gotta admit.
But she was in the movie that I was most surprised to enjoy last Oscar season,
which was
Lion. Would strongly recommend. Dev Patel, Indian guy.
Yeah.
Who it's based on a true story, based on an Indian guy who is separated from his family as a young child, like riding around on trains, and gets adopted by an Australian family, grows up, and then wants to re-find himself in India. It was very good. Would recommend.
So you're listening to Game Time AM here in 5-9 The Fan. If you're just waking up, we've been talking about the Stanley Cup final game last night. The Predators win 2-1 in regulation in the third period. Taking a 2-1 series lead, in control of that series. The Ducks are going to have to pull something out in Nashville. Otherwise, that thing's over, and your Nashville Predators will be in the Stanley Cup final. I think it's pretty weird, too. Matt Davis quietly booing in the corner over there.
The good news is that Stanley Cup final games that are in Nashville and not Anaheim could be easier for us to cover.
Like, you want to go to Nashville to cover?
I mean, I already applied for credential.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens.
Look, if they're gonna let me in to cover something that I can get to, I'm going to go cover it.
All right, that's fair. So let's talk about some Blues news. So first thing yesterday, there are two big stories yesterday.
Yeah, which one first?
Well, let's just go chronologically.
Okay.
So the story that hit first was that the Blues don't want any of their current assistant coaches.
Yeah,
they cleaned house. I am shocked. Ray Bennett is like the cockroach of assistant coaches in the NHL. He survived everything except this.
I haven't.
Come on.
Andy Murray hired
him.
So I was on the road with the team a couple times this year. Not a lot. I barely saw Ray Bennett. I know he's around. You go to the Mills, he doesn't skate. When you saw Ray at the Mills, he always had on a hoodie and gym shorts and flip-flops in the dead of winter. Hoodie, gym shorts, flip-flops, and he's just like wandering back and forth to the bench with stick. Like, if you didn't know better, if you didn't know who Ray Bennett was, you would think he was like the equipment assistant's assistant.
is that a real thing?
I don't know. And so, like, I'm sure he did something. I'm sure that he
I'm
had
sure
a job.
I'm sure he did something.
But I have a really hard, like, I don't.
Maybe it was like Seinfeld when Kramer's doing the office job and he's like doing reports and stuff and the boss calls him in. He's like, these reports, they don't actually mean anything.
Because I don't actually work here.
But that's what makes it so difficult.
I would actually go with Milton Wadhams in Office Space.
Yeah. Where, oh, they sent him down to the basement.
He had gotten fired like 8 years ago, but was still drawing a paycheck.
Well, they stopped sending his paycheck.
And it's closed the loop, so he just stopped getting. So I think with Ray Bennett, that's what happened. That he actually got fired when Andy Murray got fired, and no one noticed. And
he just kept
drawing a check.
He was hired in December 2006. I mean, think about how many players have come. Think about how many head coaches have walked. So he obviously outlasted Andy Murray, and then Davis Payne. And then Ken Hitchcock.
And then he made it
through like a quarter of the season with Mike Yeo.
Yeah.
And Mike Yeo's like, I don't even know what you do here.
I mean, yeah. Aside, I don't know, maybe you gave him head shaving tips. I don't know. I mean, what else? Like,
I don't know. They could share the same barber. I don't know.
They could.
I always used to joke that he kind of looked like Lex Luthor.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
I mean, in as much as any old bald man looks like Lex Luthor, I don't know.
Yeah. Top story on the Blues website is the four coaches that were fired yesterday.
Well, because that is the one that the organization is more in control of.
And yeah,
that's also,
I guess.
Given the two stories yesterday, we fired all the assistant coaches as the less embarrassing of the two.
Well, yeah, we'll get to that in here in a second. So Ray Bennett, Steve Thomas, who had been around less than a year.
Yep.
Rick Wilson, who had been around less than a year.
Yeah, so Rick Wilson, actually, I want to stop on real quick.
And then Ty Conklin, roving goaltender coach, was also relieved of his duties yesterday.
The Rick Wilson situation is interesting to me because apparently I had the causation backward on that because he came in with Mike Yeo, and he'd been with Mike in Minnesota and had that relationship, and so I assumed that the pipeline went, they hired Yeo, and then Yeo said we should bring Rick Wilson in.
It seemed like a package deal.
But I think it was, but I think we have it the wrong way. Because yesterday, all the contemporary reports are that Rick Wilson is very close to Hitchcock, that Rick Wilson still lives in Dallas, and so the expectation is that eventually he'll end up on Hitch's staff with the Stars. And so
he may have asked
to be
let go.
What I think occurred also is that Hitch wanted Rick Wilson, and Rick said we should bring Mike Yeo. That would be my guess as to how that relationship developed, as opposed to the Blues identifying Mike Yeo, and then he says, let's bring Wilson. My suspicion would be that Hitchcock identified Rick Wilson, and Rick Wilson said, yeah, great, but Mike Yeo should come with me, and then vouch for Yeo. That would be my guess.
That could be. So Ray Bennett was hired last June 30th. Rick Wilson, June 13th last year. Ty Conklin had been the goaltender development coach since 2013, July of 2013.
Text from Hall of Famer Dave asking if Ray Bennett is a year-round St. Louis resident. I don't know. My guess would be that, like most of those hockey coach guys, that he has a cabin in the woods that he goes to in the summer but lived here, I guess.
A condo or something.
Right. That would be my guess.
He was
here
10 and a half years.
Right.
I doubt he was renting.
I'm sure he has roots-ish somewhere.
Yeah. He has his favorite Tim Hortons in St. Louis, probably.
I'm
fine with this. I think it's weird that they, you know, bring in two assistants at, you know, almost the same time as they hired Mike Yeo, and he doesn't keep them around. But you know, what people have been lamenting after the playoffs has been, you know, just think if they had hired Mike Yeo as the head coach last summer.
Sure.
They hadn't tried the coach in waiting, standing behind Ken Hitchcock on the bench. And he was able to have his own training camp and his own assistant coaches and his system, and maybe had some influence on player acquisition last summer. And that maybe there might have been a different outcome this summer or this season. I doubt it. But, you know, this is the opportunity now. So he's going to, you know, Mike Yeo is going to form the organization in the image that he sees fit, and it's his party, and we'll see how it goes.
And Armstrong spoke to that yesterday and spoke to wanting to give Yeo a clean slate and full control over his staff and full control over the people that he wanted to work with.
Now, when you say Doug Armstrong talked about that,
yeah.
Now, you actually were on the call.
Yeah, they had a media conference call yesterday with Doug and with Mike Yeo, which actually was funny. I'm pretty sure I was the first person that dialed in. And Doug and Mike Yeo were on the call, and I don't think anyone besides me knew that Mike was on the call, because it was like 15 minutes into the call and somebody asked a question and Mike Yeo kind of piped up, and I think it was Jerry Murphy goes, "Oh, Mike, I didn't know you were here." So Mike Yeo was like hiding on a conference call.
You would think that the head coach who basically was in charge of those firings would have been on the call. But
well, assuming he was in charge of the firings, I guess. I don't know. It's an interesting...
I,
So here, and here, and
you,
here's
you
the thing.
Wait. Pause. Did you just insinuate that maybe Doug Armstrong decided to fire these guys less than a year after hiring them?
I think that probably Doug Armstrong decided, or in concert maybe with Mike in their postseason meeting, Mike maybe said, "I want to hire my own guys," and that was part of the impetus. However, I have a hard time believing that the two pieces of news from yesterday are not linked, because I don't know why else they would happen on the same day.
All right, so second piece of news. The Blues have not renewed their agreement with the Chicago Wolves to be their AHL affiliate.
Well, I think maybe the Chicago Wolves have not renewed their agreement with the St. Louis Blues.
All right, Your Honor, I'll rephrase. The agreement between the Blues and the Chicago Wolves and the AHL has ended. Whoever ended it, how it ended, whatever. And I think last year was a like one-year extension.
Yes.
From the original, what, three-year deal?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Three-year deal. So, and then it was announced that the Blues, since they're not affiliated with the Wolves anymore, will be sending their AHL players to the Chicago Wolves next year.
Yeah.
I answered a fair number of questions on Twitter yesterday about, wait, what?
So basically, as I understand the way that this works...
The next piece of news then was that the Vegas... Don't say loss.
Right.
The Vegas... Because the Knights will have enough losses on their own. I think that's the joke.
Ayo.
The Vegas Golden Knights have officially agreed to...
A five-year long-term affiliation, full affiliation, full partnership. Yeah, the whole kit and caboodle.
With the Chicago Wolves. The bottom line is they will not have very many AHL players next year.
Especially not AHL veterans. A lot of the guys, even the guys that they draft, you might expect to see Vegas draft two or three overage guys maybe in the draft as opposed to the one or so that the teams usually draft. So even those guys...
Those are pretty rare, though, because you have to be 20 before the season starts.
Right. So,
to play in the AHL.
Yes, it is. So it's going to be hard for them, basically, to find AHL veterans to fill out an affiliate. The side effect of that, I guess, is that for the Blues, whatever the problems might have been with the relationship with the Wolves... The major advantage was it's easier to get veteran AHL players if the affiliate is somewhere interesting, right? So, for example, if you're a guy like Chris Butler, who, I mean, maybe that's a bad example because he has connections to St. Louis. But in theory, if you're an AHL veteran who knows you're going to be spending most of your season in the minor leagues.
James Wisniewski.
If you're James Wisniewski and you're looking at two contract offers and one of them has you playing in Stockton for the Stockton Heat. Or has you playing for the Cleveland Monsters or whatever, and the other has you playing for the Wolves in Chicago, there's a quality of life situation there where why wouldn't you go play for the Wolves, right? I mean, and the Wolves have a good facility. They play in the Allstate Arena there in Rosemont, and it's a pretty good building. They have basically a professional style setup with their presence in Chicago, and so for those guys who make AHL teams go forward and who sort of create that attitude of winning, why not play for a more urbane, I guess, AHL team?
Or urban.
Well, but there, I mean, so I almost said, but I think urbane is better because it's the lifestyle, right? Because actually, the arena itself is kind of in the suburbs, so.
Tomato, tomato, Cogliano,
there
whatever.
You go.
It is weird, and it makes sense. And then basically, the Blues then have a year to figure out where their permanent AHL affiliate is going to be. There are still rumors that they're interested in Kansas City, even though that deal fell through. That was kind of leaked last December.
I asked Doug Armstrong about that, and he said no comment. Basically, he said that there's discussions ongoing. He said that they are full throttle toward having a full time affiliate in 18-19. There are irons in the fire, which people like less than meat on the burner.
Yeah.
But there are irons in the fire. But I asked about Kansas City, and he said, out of respect to current and potential partners, he didn't want to talk about specific cities. So.
I also heard from someone that there are rumblings that the Blues might be interested in Des Moines, Iowa as well.
Which would be interesting to me because the Iowa Wild are there, and they are a very... I mean...
What city are the Iowa Wild in?
I assume they're in Davenport or something. I don't know. I don't really know.
Quad Cities?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But, I mean, and that's the affiliate of the Minnesota Wild, and that's obviously geographically fairly close to St. Paul. I mean, I would...
Are there a lot of direct flights from Des Moines to St. Louis?
Maybe. I don't know. Is that Air Choice 1, where it's like a six-seater Cessna where you have to stop in Decatur to go anywhere? That pops up on Google Flights all the time. What you got, Matt? Iowa Wild? Where
Iowa Wild, Des Moines, yeah. Iowa.
So there's already a team in Des Moines.
I have a pretty hard time imagining the Wild wanting to give up their affiliate.
Yeah, well, then that I may have gotten some bogus information.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, basically the drive from Des Moines to Minneapolis is similar to the drive from Chicago to St. Louis or from Kansas City to St. Louis, right? It's 4 or 5 hours or whatever. So it's easy to get folks up and down.
We've heard rumblings since what, January or February, that the Golden Knights were going to be affiliated, yes, with Chicago, and that basically the Blues were headed out.
This situation has been developing for a long time. The rumors about Kansas City, I think, came out in earnest in November, and I have been told, sort of in a background kind of way, that basically what happened is the Hunt family in Kansas City, who owns the Missouri Mavericks, was going to...
And the Kansas City Chiefs.
And the Kansas City Chiefs. Was going to essentially try to migrate that Mavericks franchise up into the AHL, move them into the Sprint Center in downtown from where they are in Independence right now. They got to look at the financials, and they said, the hell with this. And that was, as I understand it, basically what happened. And so if there's a delay, it is probably in, I'm guessing, the Blues would probably have to reclaim some ownership interest in the AHL team in order to sort of satisfy the financial side of the deal.
Now, I had forgotten that when the Blues had gotten rid of Peoria,
yeah,
and basically sold the rights of the franchise to Vancouver.
I believe that's correct.
That was under Dave Checketts.
Yes. That was part of the great sell-off.
So, and I can understand, you know, they had to sell off the rights to the concession stands for 10 years to make a balloon payment on their loan.
Yeah, well.
At the time, I think that was in 2006 that they had to make that deal with Levy Restaurants.
Well, it would have been later though, right? Because they didn't close the deal until later.
Oh, maybe it's 2008.
Yeah, that makes sense.
2008. So, you know, they didn't have the cash to pay their loan payments, their balloon payments on the loan to buy the team. So they had to sell, you know, the TV rights, all the money came up front. The concession stand rights, all the money came up front. Basically, Checketts didn't have the cash to operate the team. By the end of the time that he was owner, the NHL was helping cover payroll for the organization.
Within a year of closing on the sale, he didn't have the cash to operate the
right
team.
How the NHL allowed him to come in and do that is
the
amazing.
NHL let a guy buy the Islanders who didn't have 10 grand in the bank.
This is true.
That, by the way, if you've not seen that, it's a 30 for 30, and I forget what it's called, but it's about John Spano, who basically faked bank statements all the way to control of the New York Islanders, and it is fascinating.
That was an interesting story for sure. So it's not surprising that he didn't have the cash flow to operate the Peoria Rivermen.
Right.
And there are still folks in upper central Illinois who are bitter, and we got questions yesterday on Twitter. Hey, have you heard anything about Peoria?
Well, it's because...
No, we haven't.
There's still a franchise. They play in the SPHL, but the Rivermen do still play hockey. They still play in the Carver Arena?
Yeah.
I guess in Peoria? Yeah. I mean,
so there's
infrastructure exists.
There's the AHL, and there's the ECHL.
And then there's the SPHL.
That's how far... Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty far down.
So it's a little...
Yeah, I mean, I went to one Rivs game in Peoria while they were still the Rivermen, while they were still the AHL affiliate. And, like, you know, it's a pretty big arena. It was the middle of the week. Well, I guess I didn't really play in the middle. I think maybe it was like a Thursday night game. It was the middle of the week-ish. Not well attended, right? I mean,
yeah,
you know, this would have been 2009, 2010 maybe. Not a real big crowd there for a Rivermen game during the week.
Minor league hockey is really risky. And I can understand if the numbers didn't work out, if the Hunt family was nervous about the financials and, you know, moving into a really big arena. I mean, Sprint Center is a major league size arena, 18,000.
That, I think, that was probably a large part of the cost, right? Was the rental fees and the whatnot associated with the arena, because the operational costs of the franchise, I don't think, are super high. I saw yesterday, I mean, granted, this was not very well sourced, but I saw yesterday a rumor that basically the Rivermen to operate the Rivermen was costing the Blues somewhere in the order of like $20 million a year.
20?
Yeah, which seems low to me.
That seems high.
Does it? I mean, because that's taking into account salaries and facilities and travel and everything else, right? Like,
yeah, but I mean, they're playing in like a convention center in Peoria. What do they have to...
Yeah, but they also have to travel to games, right?
Right.
And that's not...
You think that's more than like $1 million?
Probably, because they're not, I mean, they're not flying commercial. I mean, they're taking buses somewhere in the AHL, but they are, I mean, when they're flying private, I imagine. And you're paying salaries for 25, 30 players, plus all of the support staff, plus, you know, the arena staff on top of that. You're talking about insurance payments. You're talking about lease payments for the building. I mean, $20 million a year in operating
costs.
Jeff,
we should ask if we get a chance to sit down with Tom Stillman tomorrow. Oh, wait, we are.
We are.
We should ask, hey, how much does it cost to run a minor league team?
Well, I think that was part of the, you know, we'll do the pre-show. I know that was one of the questions that you and I talked about when we were talking to Tom about was how the ownership was involved.
Say this. I bet the number is below 20, and it could be substantially below 20. I understand your points, but teams to spend an extra $20 million.
But of that 20, look, if $8 million of it is payroll, all of a sudden you're looking at $12 million in operating costs.
How much do you think AHL players make?
I mean, probably about, well, so some of the time you're going to have either veterans or you're going to have prospects who are making like NHL minimum deals, basically, right? So $600K, $700K, $800K. I bet the AHL minimum is something along the lines of like close to $100,000, probably.
I think it's $100,000, $150,000. We'll Google that real quick.
I think Matt's on it right now.
All right, fair enough. Hey, this is Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. We've talked about the dismissal of all the assistant coaches. All the assistant coaches must go. I guess the video coach, he wasn't
Sean
touched.
Sean Farrell stuck around, yeah.
And the weight and conditioning coach.
Yes, indeed.
And so the texter, I don't even remember his name again.
I don't either, but the texter who had a problem with the weight and conditioning coach was probably really pissed yesterday. Because they fired every other coach right in the weight and conditioning guy makes it through.
So that means Alexander Steen's going to get hurt again next year.
Clearly.
Yeah. So if you missed that, check out InsideSTL.com a little bit after the top of the hour, and we'll have that the podcast up, the audio on InsideSTL.com or iTunes or Google Play. Google Play. It's kind of a fun word to say.
Google
Play. So I would really like to see the Blues put a team in Kansas City. I think that would be nice.
Yeah, that would be fantastic.
You know, go over for a weekend. I've got several family members in Kansas City. I could make several games there if, you know, I'm not like doing a paper and stuff for the Blues
right
over here. But
I will say this.
The best situation would have been if Kansas City had gotten its act together and found someone with deep pockets that could have gotten an expansion team there, and the Kansas City St. Louis rivalry could have become real for the first time ever.
Here is what made me nervous about that. I don't like Hunt money being tied up in the Blues. And the reason that I say that...
Well, now, part of the deal that was reported by Luke Horak and others in December was that if the Blues did put their AHL team in Kansas City, that the Hunt family would become minority investors in the St. Louis Blues here in St. Louis.
And I don't love that.
Why?
Because that creates an end for... Let's say 20 years down the road when the Blues come calling for public money for a new building, because that's coming, by the way, in 20 years.
I know.
When they get resistance, what happens when the Hunts have the ability to build a brand new shiny building in Kansas City?
The
Sprint Center will be 30 years old by the time the Blues are up on Scott Trade, basically. Because as we talk with Chris Emmerman, he has said that these rehabs they're doing to Scott Trade are designed to last the life of the building, 20 years is what they have in mind. So 20 years from now, we're talking about building a new building for the Blues. Sprint Center at that point will be 30 years old, so it's going to be out of date at that point as well. So when 20 years from now, when Lamar Hunt the eighth comes to the Blues and says, you know, we have money in this, we're minority owners, we'll put in a whole bunch of money for a brand new sparkling arena in Johnson County, Kansas. Yeah, I mean that's what made me nervous.
Kansas has no money.
No. Well, but
the state of Kansas has no money.
Well, so I say Johnson County just because obviously there wouldn't
that's
be
That's where
like,
the money is.
Well, yes, that's where the money is, and because there also wouldn't be a legislature advantage to putting it in anywhere in Missouri, because it's the same state legislature, right? So you'd be in theory getting the same breaks either way. But the point is that raised flags for me. Maybe that's not fair, and maybe that is irrational. But
I don't know if they're rational. I think it's a little bit misplaced. A couple thoughts.
Fair.
One, he's still just a minority owner, and he'd be in line behind.
But so was Dave Jeggetts. I'm sorry. So was Tom Stillman.
Tom Stillman.
So was
right.
Tom Stillman.
Right. But Dave Chackett's ran out of money. I don't think this ownership with Enterprise money, with Worldwide Technology money.
Danforth money.
They're not necessarily going to be in that situation. And second, I don't think the state of Kansas is going to have their act together even in 20 years. They're going to struggle to open the schools on time next fall. So, you know, granted the sales pitch would be, this would be the first professional sports team in the state of Kansas. Let's make it happen.
And, I mean, and no Brownback will help them a lot. Like, once Brownback's out of office, then that's a huge boon.
He might still be around 20 years.
That's possible, actually.
Hey, Matt, I heard the phone ring. Do we have someone on the line?
Yeah, Hockey Bob's on the line. He was wanting to discuss the two disallowed goals.
The two disallowed goals last night?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Hockey Bob, how are you doing this morning?
Were you half an hour ago, Hockey
Fine.
Bob?
Hey, first, I've already got the solution to your name. Should, and we hope it doesn't happen, that the Blues end up in Kansas City. We just call them the St. Louis Blues of Kansas City, just like they did in Anaheim, where they changed the name of the team like 50 million times, or like University of Missouri St. Louis, University of Missouri Columbia.
So those are
my thoughts on that.
Anaheim is like 20 miles from downtown L.A., and Kansas City is like 250 miles from St. Louis.
I grew up there. Hey, those two plays last night, you know, the first one that was disallowed goal, I mean, I'm glad they didn't call it a penalty, because I think the Anaheim defenseman kind of had a part in the Predator forward going into Anderson. But the second one, I guess the only logical conclusion that one can come is that the Nashville player just doesn't make that move to the puck, to the goal to begin with, because that running into the goalie was his only option. There is no way a hockey player can go with the speeds that he's going toward the net and just stop on a dime like that and not run into the goalie. So I guess my assumption is, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe you can correct me, the assumption is he shouldn't even have tried to make that play to begin with. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the first play, there are two players together, and the Predators player falls down. I don't think there was a collision. They were next to each other. He definitely did not extend his arms. The Ducks defenseman did not extend his arms, didn't use his stick. If they bumped it, I think it was minor, and I can see where it was incidental contact, and that, you know, basically the Predators player intended to fall on the goaltender. I don't think you could see it any other way. Now, the second one where basically the shooter collides with Gibson, I think the key word is swerve. I think he could have swerved. He's coming across the mouth of the goal. He lets the puck loose before he gets to the crease. He could swerve as he gets to the crease at the top of the crease. He doesn't.
Well, he keeps going in a straight line.
What
happens to that defenseman who's covering him? Where does his body go? Because he's right on him. He's right on the forward too.
But not to his right. He could have. He's coming across from left to right. He could go to his right, swerve to his right. And go behind the net? No, he could just basically take one sidestep and swerve, and he's just outside the crease, and he's not colliding with Gibson.
Okay, I guess that makes sense.
Jeff, what do you think?
What are your thoughts?
I don't know.
We
were talking about things that were
sequence.
More interesting than this before.
All right. I'm sorry, Hockey Bob. Go ahead.
I say, so in last night's game, it looked like Anaheim was controlling the play for a lot of time, and all of a sudden the Predators stepped it up, and they were going full throttle and literally skating by the Ducks players and stuff. What are your thoughts on that whole last 8 minutes of the game where Nashville just picked up heads of steam and just kept rolling toward the Anaheim goal? I mean, is that something that if they did that every game, would they just automatically win? I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because it seems very aggressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Hockey Bob, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Jeff, what do you think?
Look, we had a really good thing going on, and then Hockey Bob called in to talk about a thing we were talking about 40 minutes ago.
I know. So basically his question was about momentum and
talk about the irony. Holy crap.
I mean,
because the show had momentum and then it came to a grinding halt.
I'll answer Hockey Bob's question. I don't think you heard it.
I like Hockey Bob. It's just we were on a thing and then Hockey
it's
Bob
fine. We'll,
hopped
we'll,
on back.
We'll swerve here for 1 second and then we'll swerve back. The intensity that the Predators, I mean, I know that it's not, okay, so fans try to give themselves a bigger role in games than they actually have.
Smashville.
Exactly. And I think you've made the statement a couple times in this playoffs that home ice advantage doesn't really exist, except maybe in this situation, right?
Maybe. I mean, I.
His question was
they
can't,
if,
the
if
intensity.
They, if they don't lose at home, they don't lose at home. I mean, yeah. at some point, results are what they are. And you just,
his question was the intensity that the Predators had in the last 8 minutes of that game. If they could just hold that.
The crowd does help with that, I think. I do think that there's a degree of energy that comes out of a crowd that helps when in those very focused moments, for sure.
I know analytics says that there probably isn't a home ice advantage. I know analytics says that there probably momentum isn't real. I get that. But man, how that game played out last night and how the Predators have been playing at home this entire playoffs.
A lot of things become real when you believe them. And so if players believe that those things are real, then you might
Fair
see
enough.
A manifestation.
That goes back to is the term confidence. Is that just a descriptor of a team playing well, or is a team playing well because it has confidence?
Right.
If you believe it, then I think it's real. Okay, so let's take a step back. Game Time AM here on 5-9 The Fan. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Matt Davis is over there answering the phones. If you want to get involved in the conversation, 855-282-8255, 855-282-8255. I try not to say that number too fast because there's just lots of eights and twos and fives in there.
Just smash the middle of the keypad.
But you may get some sort of, I don't know, some... Why don't you try mashing the numbers sometimes and see what company you get?
You might end up talking to We Are Live.
You never know. Well, they're not on the air yet.
That's true.
They're not on for another hour and 15 minutes. Yeah.
One of these days, I'm just going to drop by there on my way home because I drive by Hampton.
It's on Hampton.
Yeah. And you could throw a baseball from the exit ramp and hit the studio.
The Paper Mache Palace, is that what it was called?
Yeah. So one of these days, I'm just going to drop by there on my way home and just hijack We Are Live.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
But you got to go to the zoo today, so
I do have to go to the
which is right down the street.
Also on Hampton, right? Yeah. Same exit,
right down the street. So we were talking about the situation, Kansas City. You were a little afraid that maybe, just maybe, but we need to talk about a story, and I see you have it up on your laptop. The relationship between the Blues and the Wolves, and you know, let me get something in here real quick, and then run with that story. So Game Time started as the fan run paper sold outside every Blues home game. We have a guy, Brian Weidler, who is, he calls himself the prospect department. He is all the members of the prospect department. He still talks about himself in the Royal We, though. And he has had an issue with this relationship between the Blues and the Wolves, because the Wolves, as an independent team, would sign their own players. The Blues, as basically letting the Wolves have their players, basically, did not have any say in who was in the lineup, who was getting playing time, who wasn't, who's on the power play, who's on the penalty kill, who the starting goaltender is. I know that it sounds like there was input from the Blues last year with Craig Berube being named the head coach. I don't think coaching decisions went through St. Louis before last year. Brian's big complaint has been that the Blues basically were letting their prospects being developed,
right,
getting ready for the NHL, without any input or control. And I think that changed this year. And we had Craig Berube on when we were hosting the Midday Grind, a month or two ago. And he basically said, hey, look, I know part of my responsibility is to get guys ready for the NHL. And you look at the impact he had on guys like Magnus Pajärvi and Ivan Barbashev, who once they played for Craig Berube for a while, seemed like very different players when they got back to the NHL. Now, the story from, is it Crane's Business?
It's Crane's Chicago Business, yes. So Don Levin is the chairman of the Chicago Wolves. He's the primary owner.
Or is it Levine?
It's Levin. In fact, because there is a pronunciation guide helpfully at the top of this article. But also, if it was Levine, it would have an E at the end. It's Don Levin.
All right.
Somebody is not a friend of JHE. That's the way that they should be. I'm just saying. Okay. Mr. West County.
Look.
You got to know your Levins and your Levines, man.
All right.
So Don Levin, the chairman of the board of the Chicago Wolves, gave some quotes to Crane's Chicago Business, and he said the relationship was, quote, a painful relationship for periods of time, and then said, quote, St. Louis would like to see their guys win, but wouldn't put any effort into doing it. They didn't do what we expected them to do, and it was difficult.
So what do you think they expect them to do?
I don't know. I asked Doug Armstrong yesterday about those comments, and he said, we wish the Wolves well. We enjoyed our relationship.
He knew that question was coming.
It was the last question, and I was the one who asked it, so I don't know if it was coming otherwise. But in any event...
it should have been coming. How's that?
Yeah, that's fair. Doug Armstrong very clearly gave it the no comment when asked about those. So I don't know. I don't know what necessarily Levin is talking about there. We heard for years that there was a little bit of static between the organizations, that the Wolves weren't really happy with, the Wolves maybe weren't happy with the quality of players they were being sent by the Blues, or maybe by the amount of oversight the Blues were attempting to exercise. But I saw comments yesterday, because in the middle of all of this, I ended up engaging a little bit with Vegas hockey Twitter, which is a thing now, I guess. Yeah. I had some conversation with the guys from Sin Bin Vegas yesterday, and I was reading Steve Karp, who is, I guess, it's the Las Vegas Review Journal, I guess, is their paper. I don't know. He's the Knights beat writer, basically. Was reading some things, and I saw them retweeting a couple of tweets that basically were like, if you're not happy with this, then don't be in the AHL. That's part of being in the AHL, is being a developmental organization. And I think actually it was Barry Trotz, while the Capitals were still in the playoffs. At one point, they called up, and I think it was Jacob Vrana in the first round. They had him called up basically to sit in the press box for a Caps game because they had some guys dinged up, and it was on the night of a Hershey game. And Trotz was asked about it, and he said basically, tough. I mean, Trotz's argument was, we would rather have security for the NHL team than have the AHL team have success, because that's a developmental league and that's the business they're in.
But Chicago being an independent team, their bottom line is based on how they draw at the Rosemont.
I guess.
How they, they need to be self-sustaining, and that means winning, and they have struggled the last couple seasons to either qualify or go very far in the playoffs. And so they, I mean, I can understand, feel their point of view.
I do feel it. But so the 15-16 season is the only season in the history of the Chicago Wolves where they finished below 500. So it's not like they were a bottom-dwelling team.
But they didn't make the playoffs last year,
but that's 15-16, right?
Well,
that
before
was
that, though.
But I guess I don't really know off the top of my head.
I thought they missed the playoffs 2 or 3 years
ago. Yeah, I mean, for sure. But the point is, they weren't bottom-dwelling teams. I mean, they were competing.
These concerns at the NHL level are not new, because remember, the Wolves used to be the affiliate for the Atlanta Thrashers.
Yes.
And I've talked to Hildy Mack, who runs the St. Louis Game Time website. She had concerns about how players were being developed in Chicago. Being an Atlanta resident and a fan of the Thrashers at the time, before they became the Winnipeg Jets under shady circumstances.
North, strong and free.
Yeah. There were concerns in Atlanta among all of the hockey fans there that...
Both of them?
I did not say that. That was Jeff Jones. Calls and letters to Jeff Jones.
Atlanta is to the NHL as St. Louis is to the NFL. Only city to lose two teams?
That's true.
Well, Oakland lost the Raiders like six times, I guess.
But. And well, yeah. And the fact that basically the team was stolen away under shady circumstances.
I don't know. I mean, I disagree with that assessment of the Thrasher situation. Nobody would buy them.
I thought it was not known that they were for sale.
I don't have that recollection. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Hildy would know.
Basically, Winnipeg came in and
Laura called. Laura's on summer vacation now, right? Her kids are gone. Call
no,
in.
No, I think. I
call
think,
in, big man.
I think she still has class.
Oh well, call in after class.
Yeah. Anyway, so I the concerns with the Chicago Wolves and how they are developing players is not a new story, and it's been ongoing thing for several years now. Was a concern about people who pay attention to prospects with the St. Louis Blues, has been an issue. Was better this year, and I think we maybe mentioned a couple times that guys, there were more guys who were quote unquote prospects instead of AHL veterans getting ice time, playing prominent roles on the Wolves this year.
And here's the name that I want to say right here that is also the name that I have concerns about going forward with this arrangement the next season, Ville Husso. Because Ville Husso gets called up from the ECHL basically at the middle of the year and gets plugged in to be Chicago's starting goaltender.
And that was pretty good in the regular
season. And he was. But I guarantee you that is an organizational decision and not a Wolves decision, because the Wolves had Bennington, who was an AHL veteran who had been stable for them. But Husso
crapped the bed in the playoffs.
Yes, and Husso had a very bad playoff season, but stayed in the net, right? And I guarantee you that is an organizational, top-down kind of decision. And so that is an indication of the Blues maybe taking a little more control. However,
let me stop you there. What's weird is, what changed? Do you think they had a different contract? Because it's not like the Blues had control or say, because the decisions that were made clearly were not in the best interest of the St. Louis Blues.
So my guess
in previous season.
My guess is that in previous seasons the Blues were flexible. The Blues were more willing to listen to the Wolves and acquiesce to their concerns. And this season,
the Blues
did not expect there to be an extension of the agreement. The Blues, I'm sure, as of last summer, did not expect it. And so the Blues said, the hell with this. We're doing what we want to do for this
and
year.
Because
we don't have to deal with you people anymore after this.
We'll extend as much control as we want to because we don't care about hurting your feelings.
Basically, yes. That would be my suspicion as to why the change.
All right, that's fair. That's fair.
So before we go to Brian, I just wanted to point out again with Husso. There's no guarantee that he's going to be playing for the Wolves next year because the Wolves are Vegas's primary affiliate, right? So they're going to have control over most of the operations down there, which means that if Vegas has a goalie that they want to plug in there, and they will, if Vegas has a developmental goalie that they want to see play in the AHL, that guy's getting the net.
But the issue is the age. You have to be 20 before the season starts.
Yeah.
The chances that they're not going to draft a 20-year-old goaltender.
Well, but I believe, and I'd have to look this up, but I believe that Vegas has to draft three goalies, maybe? Three or four?
But they go back to juniors because they're not
AHL ready. I'm talking in the expansion draft. In the expansion draft,
so
Vegas,
they'll have one NHL
they will have an
veteran.
NHL, right, who will be in the AHL. And that's a guy who's going to need to play.
So there's that guy. So there's Phoenix Copley.
Someone like that, basically. Who's going to, do you want Husso playing on the downside of a 50-30 split in the AHL?
No, and he's obviously better than the ECHL.
And what do you do with Binnington? And then what do you do with Fitzpatrick and Opilka? I mean, Fitzpatrick and Opilka can go back to the juniors.
I've made the point that if the Blues were looking to move Ville Husso because they have Jake Allen locked down for the next 4 years, that this might be the summer that they make that deal.
Sure, but
you don't think there's much value in him right now?
Yeah, everybody's got a Ville Husso.
Okay.
Everybody's got a 21-year-old goalie who they think is going to be their guy.
All right, last thing before we get to break. You wanted to talk about the possibility that Craig Berube could be headed to St. Louis as an assistant coach.
Yeah, I think that I would maybe not bet the farm. Like, it is less of a lock than Craig Anderson winning the Masterton, but it is super likely. So you have these two announcements both yesterday. And I have a really hard time believing that there wasn't some consideration with the Blues that they have to make sure that there's room in the organization for the coaches in Chicago. So it's not just Berube. It is Berube, Daryl Sador, who had a great career as a St. Louis Blue, played all of like 35 games.
Wore number 44.
Yes, he did. And Daniel Tkachuk, who had an even more auspicious
career. Wait. There's no way he pronounces his name the same way as
he does. He pronounces it the same.
But there's a Z in there.
Yeah, well, it's Dan Tkachuk. It's pronounced the exact same.
What trade was he involved with with the St. Louis Blues?
He was an ice cat. I don't know that he ever made it here, and I'm not entirely sure.
No, he didn't
sure.
play for the Blues, but right. didn't they trade him? Didn't they trade him in some deal?
Maybe
look that up. We should know that. I don't know. I think Craig Berube would be a good addition. I don't know if Daryl Sador or Mr. Tkachuk would be.
My guess would be that you. By the way. Daniel Tkachuk acquired with Fred Brathwaite, Sergei Varlamov, and a 2001 ninth-round pick in exchange for Roman Turek and a fourth-round pick from Calgary.
Okay. I knew he was involved in the trade
of Roman Turek, yes.
Yeah.
My guess would be that you will see both Berube and Sador on the bench in St. Louis next season.
I wouldn't be opposed to that. Berube is an NHL quality. He was a head coach in Philadelphia. He's done...
And
really well in Chicago.
And Armstrong said yesterday that when the Blues hired him for the Wolves, he had offers to be an NHL assistant, but decided he would rather be a head coach in the AHL. So
that makes sense. All right, we need to take a break. This has been Game Time AM here in 5-9 The Fan. Come back for our second hour. We're going to have a guest. We're going to talk more hockey. Maybe we'll touch on the Cardinals. I need to look at the score. Did they win?
They lost 6-3.
Okay. All right, fair enough. I'm Brad. That's Jeff. Come back with Matt Davis here in just a minute on Game Time AM.